Well, Shabbat Shalom, everyone. Good to be back with you. You know? But what a trip home. 24 hours, 5 airports. It was wild. I was in the city of Victoria speaking at a Messianic congregation, and then back to Belo Horizonte, where I spent the majority of the time, and then from Belo Horizonte to take the plane to São Paulo. Biggest airport I've ever seen in my life. You could walk for 45 minutes. It had its own weather. No, not really. It wasn't quite that. But it was amazing how big. It's a very large city. And then from São Paulo to Miami, and then Miami to Boston, and then Boston to Needham. And that was it. That was... But it really is wonderful to be with you. I think. Okay, so I'll tell you, it's a huge crowd. This is a Messianic Jewish synagogue in Belo Horizonte, a city of about 6 million people, about 500 people at the service, another 3,000 estimated were online watching. It was really quite an experience. I'll tell you more about that. And in the second picture, I think that one is just, oh yeah, that's me speaking at that conference. And my translator is a fabulous guy who, if you come to the UMJC conference, you'll meet him. But Mateus he's one of the major leaders. He is the major leader of this synagogue, along with his dad. I'll tell you more of what they've accomplished in recent years. But my reason for going had to do with Spanish-speaking people in the Messianic Jewish world and Spanish-speaking believers who have begun to understand that they have roots in the Jewish community from a long time ago. And that's, I'll be talking again more about that as we go along. The trip began actually in Dallas for 3 days, where I had been asked by the UMJC to establish a committee of people to investigate how, if it is possible at all, but how it might be possible, to re-engage with these folks and ascertain if there are legitimate claims to Jewish authenticity. And given a 500-year absence of Jewish life, we're talking from the time of the expulsion from Spain until now, where they have been completely disconnected or largely disconnected from the Jewish world. I'll tell you more of the story as we proceed, but heading up that project, I was with a lot of people you know, Rabbi John Fisher, the former president of the union, Barney Kasdan, the current president. I was president a long time ago, so three of us. There were regional directors there. There were some friends from the Messianic Jewish Alliance who I was quite impressed with. One guy in particular, a rabbi who is, boy, I hope you get to know this guy because he's really something. So anyhow, the whole idea was, and I'll just read this because it expresses it succinctly, okay? The goal of our meetings in Dallas was to help bring about the unification of the existing Messianic Jewish movement with those Jewish followers of Yeshua who, beginning with the Spanish Inquisition, have been cut off from the life of our people Israel for hundreds of years. So that kind of tells you what we were doing in Dallas, 3 days of meeting. And the outcome of that meeting was a term. We described our project as the Retorno Project, R-E-T-O-R-N-O. It's a Spanish word for return. And again, that'll become clearer as we talk. So the name for the people that we're relating to is, you hear the common term Morano. That's a very negative term, and that's not the term really that best describes it. It's Anusim, Anusim. It means forced ones. And the basic story is this, that in 1478, the Spanish Inquisition was inaugurated by King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella of Spain. The political and social situation was this, that the Muslims from North Africa had controlled the Iberian Peninsula for a long time, but the reconquista, the retaking of the of that area, again, Spain and Portugal, from the Islamic people had occurred, and Isabella and Ferdinand were very concerned about consolidating their power and unifying their territory. And unfortunately, one of the sad results was that of that was that, you see, there were many Jewish people in Spain, even in very high levels of government and commerce at the time. And during the Muslim period, Jews and Muslims, that was a golden age of Jewish life in that part of the world. There was a lot of very good things happened. But this was a sad moment in the life of the historic church, where because of insecurity about their political and economic situation after the Reconquista, they began the Inquisition, which targeted principally, though not exclusively, and it gets more complicated than I understand at this point. But the principal thing was to weed out what they called the new Christians. The new Christians were Jews who converted to Catholicism, sometimes out of conviction, undoubtedly, but oftentimes because of growing pressure that if they didn't do this, they would be in big trouble. And the big trouble manifested beginning again in 1478 with a program of terrible persecution. Now, there's another picture that I gave Ralph to show you, and this picture is from the museum that Mateus and his father and others put together, a magnificent museum of the Inquisition, and I have a copy of it, and I'll show it to you later. The museum, but this is just one picture of the special clothing that people were charged with heresy, people who were charged with heresy by the Inquisition had to wear. And I could show you much more. I was in a room in this museum that Mateus Zadona and his father had built. It's an amazing museum. Really quite complete with all, well, I'll tell you about that. But I was in a room where they had facsimiles or copies of the torture implements. And let me tell you, wow, okay? And I don't want to get into it during a sermon, but let me just say it was horrific to the max. It was absolutely horrific. And the goal was to get confessions out of the people. And of course, under torture, you'd say anything. So it had nothing to do with gaining truth at all. It had to do, among other things, with, again, solidifying the power of the church, and church and government were intimately connected. But also, there was an economic reason, because when someone was executed by the Inquisition, the deal was that 50% of their property would go to the church and 50% would go to the state. So you can imagine how that motivational element was contributing and made evil even more evil. It was just terrible. Well, what happened then, and this is something many of us have known about, in 1492, the same year that Columbus sailed to the New World, we were kicked out of Spain, and it was a terrible moment. The voyages oftentimes were the captains of the ships would rob everybody, do terrible things, throw them in the ocean. I mean, it was just awful. And I believe it was about 100,000 Jews, and I have the figure here, yes, 100,000 Jews between 1492 and 1496 emigrated to Portugal. Now, Portugal initially was not as tough on the Jews, but the king there wanted to make a political alliance with Spain, and he wanted to marry the daughter of Ferdinand and Isabella, and they said, well, you can only marry our daughter if you initiate the Inquisition more forcefully in Portugal and kick the Jews out as we have kicked them out. And so that exacerbated this horrible moment in Jewish history when we were forced out of Spain and then Portugal. Now, the Anusim are correctly understood to be not just people who ended up speaking Spanish or moved to Latin America. Many did. Many went to Latin and South America. many ultimately ended up. There was a very large community, and I saw a video of these modern people who were Anosim, but who live, whose ancestors moved to New Mexico. Very large community in New Mexico. And just the poignant and amazing stories of these folks who, regular folks like you and me, they don't, you know, they just happen to be speaking Spanish as their main language, but they had family stories that went all the way back. But Anosim also found themselves, they moved all over. They went to the Netherlands. They went to Amsterdam, very large community there. They moved to North Africa. As a matter of fact, we know, I believe Deb Kaplan, a good friend of our congregation here, her roots are Anosim, but her family became mainstream members of the Jewish community in North Africa, in Egypt, I believe, but I could be corrected on that. So you find people all over, and again, these people were suspected of keeping Jewish customs. So poignant, some of the artifacts of the time. One, I'll tell you about one in particular. It was just a thin stalk with a little decoration at the top. But when it's put against a wall and the light shines on it, it makes a Mogen David, a Star of David. You see, people hid their Jewishness, and there's a museum in Dallas, which has many of these artifacts as well, worth seeing, very interesting museum. So people hid their Jewishness, but there were spies, there were people looking out, and I should tell you, under torture, one of the major reasons I had neglected to mention was to get you to name other people who also were not being strictly faithful to the Catholic religion, but were secretly practicing their Judaism. And it kind of reminds me of the Soviet Union in some ways, but you see these patterns at various points in history. So here's an interesting fact. Anosim from Brazil began a congregation in New York, the very first synagogue in New York City, 1730, Shevet Yisrael, and that was the first synagogue in the United States. Now, the oldest synagogue building is in our neighborhood. Does anyone know the name? The Toro Synagogue, exactly, Toro Synagogue, 1749. These were Anosim from the West Indies who came to the United States. So all kinds of interesting things there. Very sad history, but all this translates into something that I would like to suggest to you, that giving the Anosim voice and recognizing from those among the Anosim who have some level of attestation or evidence for their Jewishness seems to be a very holy endeavor, I would say, even a moral obligation. I would go that far. They've been cut off from Israel for five centuries, and what we feel in this group that I'm working with in the UMJC, the Retorno Committee, is that it's time to redress that problem if we can and to the extent that we can. Okay, so now let me tell you a little bit about the Belo Horizonte Conference. And Ralph, if you want to put up that picture of the big crowd, it was fantastic. I'll tell you about the people in Belo. I have never met a warmer group, aside from Ruach Israel, I have never met a warmer group of human beings in my life. It's all hugs and smiles and warmth and a collective sense of excitement about returning to the Messiah of Israel as Jews. It really is something. I got to speak, got to play with their big band. Of course, that's always fun, and as you can imagine. But there was a feeling of genuine love for things Jewish and a genuine desire to be counted as part of the larger Messianic Jewish world. It was really quite something. Now, I want to spend a little time talking with you about the biblical case for unifying the Jewish people. In other words, can we, aside from just in our natural human sense of, hey, these people have suffered, they've been cut off, let's find a way to bring them in. Is there a biblical underpinning to this kind of endeavor? And I want to suggest there is. I mean, the most obvious reflection of God's desire for unity among his people, we read about right in the Besorah in the New Testament in Acts chapter 15, when the rabbis there discussed, we have all these Gentiles coming into the community of Yeshua. How do we relate to them? You recall it, right? And even earlier than that, a few chapters earlier, Acts 10 and 11, you find that God supernaturally reveals that his desire is there to be, in one sense, one body of the whole Messiah, of course differentiated as Jewish and Gentile. That's a critical theological thing that a lot of people miss, but we don't miss it, because if not, then Israel, the national physical existence of Israel, loses all theological meaning and import, and that's not something we go for. No, Israel is principally, not exclusively, but principally, a physical identity, like Abraham was the genuine real dad of Isaac, and he was the real dad of Jacob, and that pattern continues, and we affirm that, and that is right. Of course, there is the possibility of conversion, but in the body of Messiah, God wants people who are not Jewish to be joyfully his as those who are part of predominantly Gentile bodies, etc. And then, of course, we have some folks who just need and want Jewish identity, and so not as Jews, but as Gentiles among us. Beautiful thing. The larger picture is that God is big on unity. He wants unity, however that's to express itself organizationally or et cetera, and we see it in Acts 15. We also see it very specifically with respect to Israel in the book of Ezekiel. The prophet Ezekiel is told to do what we might call an enacted parable. An enacted parable. The prophets often do this, you know. But this one was, go take two sticks and hold them together in front of the people. Does anyone know what the two sticks were to represent? Does anyone know? Who? Yeah, the northern tribes and Judah and Ephraim, right? Or Judah and Israel, the northern tribes. And the prophetic picture is one of ultimate unity, so instead of being separated, brought together. So you have these as examples. And so so here we are, and we're in this very interesting situation. Now, helping the process a little bit, and we have to parse this and figure out how it all fits together, but in recent days, we're talking about over the last few years, both Spain and Portugal have offered full citizenship to the Anusim, who can demonstrate with some kind of documentary proof that they are, in fact, those who were kicked out of Spain and Portugal 5 centuries ago. Isn't that amazing? It's astounding. These countries are offering a certificate and a actual citizenship with no reservation. You become a citizen, even though you haven't lived here in 5 centuries. It's an amazing phenomenon. And this also is a kind of providential wink from God to us that what we're doing has some substance beyond our own any kind of wishful thinking. Now, as we get close to the end here, I want to talk about the challenges. And these are things that I hope you'll pray about for us. The big challenge is that after 5 centuries of separation from the Jewish community, can the UMJC find a way to reasonably and joyfully welcome such people among us? You see, it's tricky and it's harder for us because we are already in this new space of saying that Judaism and Christianity are not mutually exclusive, and here we are as a Messianic Jewish synagogue doing what most synagogues yet don't do. We honor Yeshua. Are you glad about that? You're darn tootin' we're glad about that, because the evidence is in, the facts are in. He's the Mashiach, and the most Jewish thing we can do is to honor that reality. I think that that's not an overstatement. But still, because we're relatively new, and because issues of Jewish identity are still complex for us, And there are lots and lots, I believe thousands, of these Jewish, of these Anusim believers in Yeshua who had perhaps been part of another communion, but they are looking, God is awakening in them a desire for Jewish life, and we want to embrace them, but how do we do it in a responsible way? And that is a big deal. How do we as a union, with help from our Anusim friends, develop a means to verify Jewish identity at some level? Because if you don't do that, if it's a free-for-all, then that trivializes the meaning of Jewishness. Would you agree with that? Yeah. It is absolutely so. We don't have the right to do that. If we're going to wear talises and yarmulkes and all the have all the accoutrements of Jewish life and worship, which we do sincerely, we better not be viewed as phonies in the process. That's real, real important, because the Jewish community is looking at us too. So we have to see if we can. I believe we will find a way. And the good news is that the Brazilians that in Belo Horizonte have already begun to develop over the past 15 years standards by which they can say to their own members, you know, you really are Jewish. You are Jewish. And you have returned, and others, well, you know, there isn't adequate attestation. It's just your private inclination, but we can't go by that. You're still welcome to come, but we can't affirm your Jewishness. Okay, but they're way ahead in this. They've made some significant progress, and we can build on what they're doing with them, not apart from them. So, and then the second thing we need to do, it's a real challenge, what criteria could be employed to discern the likelihood of genuine Jewish ancestry? Okay, that's what I've talked about. How do we bring them about? How do we develop these standards? And thirdly, how can these folks catch up so they can embrace meaningful Jewish life despite centuries of disconnection from the Jewish experience? In other words, they know very little. And what can we do? And I think there are things we can do. I think at MJTI, frankly, I'm hoping we can offer some courses in theology in Portuguese. Why not? And in Spanish. I think our schools should take up the mantle. I frankly feel that given God's heart of restoration for Israel, and given this amazing developing reality of the Spanish-speaking, Portuguese-speaking, particularly, segment of the Anusim, saying to our union, you know, we want to connect with you. I believe this is one of the most exciting things that's happened in Messianic Judaism in quite a while. I think this is an amazing opportunity. And it's not just a matter of giving to them, bestowing on them. No. Number one, we are not going to be religious imperialists who say, oh, we'll teach you everything. No, it's a combination. We will teach them, they will teach us. And they have lots to offer us. You should hear the music. Oh, my. The dance that they did, phenomenal. I mean, we're capable, but they've just taken it in some ways to new levels in Belo Horizonte. You would love it. Okay? So they have much to give to us. The Brazilians strike me, and this has been a perception I've had for quite a while as I've gotten to know Brazilian people. It's a large community in Framingham, for example. They are extremely warm people, and they are intelligent and very hardworking and very creative. Well, come on in. Help us become more of what we can be. You see, many are from the Sephardic community are people from that area, so that's another way of describing Spanish-speaking Jews. It's a more general term, but this, let's just say this. The Sephardim and the Ashkenazim need each other, right? And so that is what is so great. God's heart is a heart of restoration. And so where do we go from here? I really want to encourage you all to come to the UMJC conference and meet some of these folks and lots of other of our friends from around the country. Make it a point. And there'll even be some scholarship money available to help folks to pay the registration. But here's the good news. You don't have to fly anywhere. Right? And there's no hotel costs. I frankly encourage every one of you to come. And you'll meet these people, and you'll hear the UMJC Klezmer Band. Oh, it's so good. And the last song we do is a song in honor of our Anusim brothers. It's called Avraham Avinu. It's in Ladino, which is the language of Spanish-speaking Jews, as they traverse the world after the Spanish Inquisition, and we do a great version of it. And Aviva's in the band. Sue is. I'm hoping Dr. Rob here will join us. We'll see. Hopefully that could work out. So the first thing is make it a point to come to the conference. Number two, I want to ask for prayer for me and for the team's efforts. I'm heading this whole thing up. I was asked to do that. Feel pretty qualified in terms of the general ways of doing it. But I would ask you just to continue to pray that I do a good job. So far, so good. I think people feel that we're really moving ahead. There's a lot of excitement among the UMJC in this direction. But pray for me and our team. And pray for good solutions to the challenges that we face. How do you reintegrate people who've been gone from the community for 500 years? It's likely not going to be any kind of conversion because they're not converting from something, they're returning to something. And that's a whole subject in of itself. I'm not going to go any more into that because these become subtleties which we're trying to wrestle with and figure out. But pray for good solutions to the challenges we're facing. We can't afford two problems. We can't afford to just get so exhausted with the complexities that we say, phooey, forget about it. You know, no, we're not going to do that. But that's a temptation. I know a whole other Messianic Jewish group who looked at all this and said, forget it. We can't get involved in all this. It's too much. That's not going to be us. We have, in our world, the intellectual acumen and I think the heart to be able to pull all this off. But pray for that we'd be able to meet the challenges. So here's what I want to leave you with. God is doing something new and exciting. Don't get lost in the disunity in our world today, right? There's so much disunity, and isn't it a crazy moment? You know it is. I know it is. Don't get lost in all the complexity of that at the horizontal human level. Don't get lost in all of that, because God is at work, and he's doing new and exciting things, and he ultimately will bring good to this world. So don't get lost in all the nervousness that this age is, occasions, but rather just trust him. He is doing new things, including this wonderful move where Israel is being put back together under the banner of Yeshua. So that's the story. Shabbat Shalom, everyone.